This podcast is, of course, made possible through the support of our members and from Dartmouth Hitchcock. Imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community with convenient locations throughout northern New England. World-class providers are closer than you think. Visit dartmouthhitchcock.org to learn more. Dartmouth Hitchcock is here.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. A new mid-year review of New Hampshire's economy finds the state in an odd predicament. Low unemployment, lots of jobs, but not enough people to fill them. The report by New Hampshire Business Review explores why that's the case and finds there's more to it than just the Granite State's well-known aging demographic profile. Other factors might include too many New Hampshire residents finding good jobs out of state, and even modern teenagers preferring other pursuits than a weekly paycheck. Today in The Exchange, where are the workers? We'll get the full picture as part of our monthly roundup of economic headlines. And later in the hour, we'll cover an emerging trend in commercial real estate, both here and around the country, what to do with shopping malls when the shoppers go elsewhere. We'll see what's being done to bring new life to dying malls. And let's hear from you. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Our guest for the Economic Roundup, Jeff Feingold, editor of New Hampshire Business Review. Jeff, thanks for being here.
Great to be here, Laura.
Also with us, Steve Norton, executive director of the New Hampshire Center for Public Policy Studies. Steve, welcome back. Good to see you, too.
Good morning, Laura.
And also with us, Russ Thibault, president of Applied Economic Research and Economic and Real Estate Consulting Firm based in Laconia. And Russ, good to see you as always. Thank you.
Great to be here. Thanks.
I want to start with you, Jeff, because this mid-year economic review comes from your publication, New Hampshire Business Review. Lots in here and real interesting. What jumps out at you the most from this, Jeff?
Well, the bottom line, we've been doing this for many years, just like kind of taking the pulse, the economic pulse of the state every mid-year. And this year, I think it's interesting is that the overriding thing is that the economy is doing better than it has been in a while. It's not that it's firing on all cylinders, but you know, there's strength in manufacturing, all the major sectors, construction, real estate, hospitality, retail, the whole thing. But the real takeaway is that, as we've talked about on this show before, is that there's really been a scarcity of labor. I think it was Russ last time mentioned that we're basically beyond full employment in this state, really, with a 2.7% unemployment rate. And what that has meant finally is that the employees are in the driver's seat, and wages are starting to go up pretty significantly, because we haven't seen growth in wages in quite a while, and we've heard that on a national level as well, as they're always looking at that. And that's really what the bottom line is, that there are fewer people who are available to work, and because of that, employers are being forced to have to raise wages to find the employees they say they need.
So laboring for workers is the headline. Hotter New Hampshire economy means businesses are scrambling for employees. That's a kind of an enviable position, though, to be in, right, Jeff? I mean,
if you're an employee, I guess, but if you're an employer, it's not necessarily the best thing, because as I said, the economy is getting better. There's more opportunity for growth for these businesses, and they're saying they don't have enough employees to actually help get to that next stage of growth, especially if you think about like in construction and real estate, which is a serious problem in construction in terms of getting employees with skills and stuff. And that's one of the aspects here is the aging workforce. And, you know, if you can't find someone who could do masonry, you can't find someone to do plumbing or carpentry, you can't take that next job to build another house, another building. And that's really where the concern is.
What jumps out at you from this, Steve Norton?
Sort of the same, except at a macro level, this represents a skills mismatch, that there are certainly people that are looking for jobs and there are employers looking for jobs, and they're either unwilling to pay the wages to draw people here, or these other individuals don't have the appropriate skills. And that highlights to me that we have a short-term problem that may not have a short-term solution. And the question is more, how long-term do we deal with this skills mismatch and the transition from an old economy to whatever this new economy is going to be?
When you say an old economy to this new economy, give us a little bit more there, Steve.
Well, you think, you know, this issue about teens not working, that started back in the 90s when we had our first big recession, and there was a big drop off in the number of teens that were working. Labor force participation rates started to change back then. We saw the economy in New Hampshire begin to shift away from advanced high-tech manufacturing. We're sort of at the tail end of that transition, and the labor force hasn't necessarily adapted itself to that as it has in other places. The way you see this the most, I think, is that if you just look at the normal measure of unemployment rate, it's at, you know, one of the lowest in the country, about 45% lower than the national average.
Wow.
But when you encourage measures of discourage workers or other things, we're only 20% lower than the national average. So that tells you that there are people, we still haven't figured out jobs for those folks. And when you combine that with, you know, the general demand for construction workers and retail workers, our economy hasn't adjusted yet.
Well, so let's dig into a little bit more. And Russ Thibault, Steve touched on this, the idea of the labor force participation rate. So getting kind of geeky here, but this is really important when you look at businesses saying, hey, we can't find the right people. Give us a little bit on that, Russ, please. First of all, just what that means, labor force participation rate.
First of all, labor force participation rate is the percentage of the population age 16 and over, 16 to 150 years old, that are either working or actively looking for work.
So and they're actively participating in the labor force.
Right. They're either working or they've been looking for a job during the last month. And that has dropped here in New Hampshire. I think the major thing that is driving the low unemployment rate that we have and the tension between employers and employees and the mismatch that Steve talked about is that there's really two things. One is the state's population isn't growing, but our job base is. We've added almost 50,000 jobs since the bottom of the downturn, but we've added almost no people. So that's number one. We're just not growing as fast. Our labor force is not growing as fast. And then the second part of it is that the population is aging. And we've talked about this before. I mean, almost ad infinitum. But it really is relevant here. We're not adding a lot of people, and we're aging. Now, the other interesting thing that I saw looking at some of the data is that for people age 64 and over, there's a sharp increase in labor force participation.
So baby boomers are staying in the workforce longer.
They're staying in the workforce. It used to be about 1 in 10. Now it's about 1 in 8 of the people age 64 all the way to the end are working. It's almost 1 in 8 now. So that's gone up. Labor force participation rates in other age categories, actually young people, it's up a little bit. Middle-aged people is down a tiny bit. But the major difference in terms of demographics is people that were retirement age are more likely to stay in the labor force. The problem is we have a whole lot of those people. And even though they're more of them as a percentage are working, overall – retirement is taking a toll on our labor force.
So the headline again, laboring for workers, businesses scrambling to find the right people. And yet, Jeff, this report from NHBR also finds that 27,000 Granite Staters want to work full time, but only have been able to find part time work. So, you know, I look at that as just your average person. I say, okay, they want to work full-time businesses. Why don't you hire them full-time?
Yeah, well, I think it goes I think it goes back to what Steve is saying with the skills mismatch. You know, these people, maybe they're available to work and they have a certain skill set, but it's not applicable to, you know, let's say an advanced manufacturing company that's looking for someone to do some work. They don't have the computer skills and that kind of background. Or if it's a construction industry and they've never been in the construction industry, that could explain some of it. And as far as everything else goes, I'm baffled when I look at that number, because just driving everywhere, there's signs for help wanted in almost every store you go to. It's just crazy how it is. It reminds me of, you know, the 90s when it was just this hot economy we had here, when I saw that number, didn't quite sink in with me.
The 27,000 have part time and want full time.
And want full time, but it's obvious. It seems to me that they're just not, either they're not really able to get the jobs that are available, or employers are just have some kind of standards for the employees that they are hiring, and maybe they're just kind of raising this flag about how not being able to find any employees when maybe there are people available, there are bodies available, but they're not the ones that they want.
So they're being too fussy, Russ? Is that it?
Well, it's possible. I think another thing, first of all, Steve's comment about the skill mismatch, but also there's a lot of geography in the state. And the North Country is not performing as well as Southern New Hampshire. So you may have a situation where people in the North Country want to work full-time, but there aren't full-time jobs for them in the North Country. And employers in Southern New Hampshire are desperate for employees, but they're all too far away. So it could that could be part contributing to it as well.
Okay, so speaking of – go ahead, Stephen. Do you want to jump in?
I just would want to say, you know, you got to segment the labor force into high-wage, high-skill, low-wage, low-skill. And, you know, using that 27,000 number really hides a lot of variation. There may be 2,000, 3,000 managers who used to be in advanced high-tech manufacturing who there's no use for anymore because those jobs have been gone and will be lost forever. And how do you retrain those people versus a high schooler who's coming out and needs some skills in construction or HVAC work? Very different policy responses to those different people looking for work.
Policy responses in terms of how you
retrain
them,
how you help work them. With them. Exactly. Yeah.
So a minute ago, we talked about our employers too fussy. Maybe they should train people more. Maybe they should realize that, you know, nobody's perfect. What about employees? Maybe I'll turn to you first, Russ. Are employees saying, well, you know, these sectors are growing, but I'm not interested? I mean, are employees being too fussy? Because Jeff's right. I see help wanted signs everywhere in Concord.
Yeah, they
everywhere.
Kind of replaced for, you know, sale, on sale.
It's a good
now,
problem to have.
Work here.
So
we don't care if you buy anything. Just as long as you work here, we'll be happy.
So are employees being too fussy?
Probably some. I think there's a multiple set of factors that are contributing to that. I wish I had a full-time job, but I don't. I think that employees, yeah, some of them are probably expecting, you know, their expectations are too high. But, you know, overall, listening to the conversation this morning, I'm thinking this is a pretty good problem to have
for
a state. You know, wages are rising. If you want a job, you can find it. If you want a full-time job, you probably can find it. You may have to compromise a little bit other than the employer side of it. But employers have had it pretty good. Maybe it's, you know, the employees' turn to kind of really get some of the benefits of this economy.
Steve?
And that argument is going back and forth right now, and it will go back and forth in this next legislative session as we think about wages raising versus lowering business and profits tax or other policy changes which bring jobs or bring people or, in essence, tilt the playing field towards New Hampshire, either from a labor force or a job perspective.
Yeah, that is actually a good point that Steve raises, because that's part of the discussion that they're having. A lot of people in New Hampshire are finally saying, you know, maybe what we need to do is attract more people, and then we can businesses will come because we'll have more basically available workforce. And it's also a discussion that's going on in Maine as well, where we don't have the problems that Maine has in terms of the economy. Their economy is in a real state of flux. We're not. New Hampshire is an oasis compared to how Maine's been going through economically, and that's what their discussion is. Maybe what they need to do is to attract people who have the skills, who are younger, and then that'll attract entrepreneurs or businesses to open up in the state.
It's a bit of a chicken and an egg. Without the jobs, you can't attract the people, and without the people, once you get to this level of unemployment, it's much harder to attract employers to the state.
Well, it's interesting because the line for so long has been, what can we do as a state to attract businesses to come and open up jobs? Now, Steve, it's what can we do to attract people, workers.
We, unfortunately, as policymakers, often try and hang our hat on one hanger, and we're going to hang ourselves if we do that, is my response to that. That we can't just think about bringing people. We can't think about, just making the environment better for businesses. It is a complicated question with a complicated set of solutions, and certainly labor force is one issue, but that might solve itself if the Massachusetts market heats up so much that their ability and people's interest in being around 128 changes and they move to New Hampshire as they did in the 80s and the 90s.
Right.
So it's a complicated system that we have to deal with.
Russ?
Yeah. Traditionally, what we've seen when this kind of environment emerges, which is very low unemployment rate. And remember, that's been the case in New Hampshire for a long time. The aberration was from 2008 to probably 2013, where our unemployment rate actually got pretty high. What traditionally happened was people did border hop from Massachusetts to more affordable housing in New Hampshire. We're still not building many housing units in the state. We're still only building 2,000 or 3,000 housing units a year. The long-term growth forecast is we need probably three times that many. And we're just not seeing the new housing being built, and we're not seeing the border hopping of workers.
Yeah, and an important thing is that the new housing is being built, but it's not the kind of not necessarily the kind of housing we need to have to attract people to move here because it's not low cost. These usually in many cases these are higher end units that are being built, higher end houses, and there's not that you know what they call workforce housing, the affordable housing that people are. Who are trying to find and they can't find it.
Well, a little bit later, we're going to talk about repurposing dying shopping malls. So maybe there's an opening for you there, Jeff. The number for you to join us here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. It's a roundup of New Hampshire economic news today, and we're looking at a new mid-year economic review that finds there are plenty of jobs in the Granite State, but not enough workers. Let's get your take on this. If you're looking for work or you feel underemployed, what are your thoughts when you hear that New Hampshire businesses are scrambling for workers? Is that your perspective? Also, if you're an employer, do you see this skills mismatch that Steve Norton talks about? Again, the number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. One more time, that number, 1-800-892-6477. Two more pieces from this mid-year economic review and why we might be seeing this the shortage of workers or, again, mismatch between the jobs that are there and the workers that are available. One, Jeff, fewer teens working today. Now, by how much? A lot or a little?
Well, it seems to be we're talking about that labor force participation. Compared to 2000, that was a 70% participation rate by teenagers. And
70% of teens held down jobs. Yeah, and now that's a lot.
Yeah, now it's 50%. It's half. And
wow. That's really a big drop in just 15 years.
Yeah, and that could be one of the reasons why people are just kind of looking for people to work.
Why McDonald's
seasonally.
Is desperate to hire folks,
if
right?
If you think about it, and it's not really quite clear why this is happening, except you know there's that general point that a lot of kids have other things they're doing in the summertime. I'm not quite clear if that's the best thing for the future of the society and not to teach people how to work. But those are decisions that parents are making and the kids are making where they have different kinds of pursuits that they're doing in the summer and, as opposed to, you know, getting that part-time job or the summer job for to make some money.
Oh, well, I find that really interesting. And a big drop, guys, 70% in just the year 2000. That's not that long ago, right. Held down jobs. And now just 50%, Steve.
And we're still much higher than the national average.
Really?
Yeah. So it feels bad or different to us, but more of our teens work than in every other age category. You know, the national studies say there are fewer low-entry jobs for people. College requirements now suggest getting internships and other things and those aren't counted as working according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. So there are lots of things that have changed in the teen pre-college engagement process, which makes can explain some of that, or at least that's what the national study suggests.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay, so the teens, sort of 18, 19, 20, who might be doing an amazing internship during the summer, getting very valuable work experience. That doesn't count.
Right. Nor do kids going to take college-level classes in the summertime instead of doing, workforce. So the demands on a kid at 16 are very different than they were, certainly when I was growing up in Guilford, New Hampshire.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. Go ahead, Russ.
Also, remember there's like 20,000 fewer young people in New Hampshire because boomers' kids have kind of moved on. And the millennial kids are not in that age category yet, although they're moving towards it. The other thing, the biggest thing—
But we're talking percentages here, so
right.
50% versus 70%.
Yeah. The thing is, the big difference is staying in school. More of the young people at high school age are continuing to go to school. We have, I think, if I'm not mistaken, isn't it mandatory in New Hampshire?
Yes, under Governor Lynch, that changed.
So that changed. And then more are going to college or technical schools. So maybe it's building for the future more. That's part of it, part of the reason why the participation rate is down among young people.
Okay, there's one more sort of micro trend in these numbers that I'm going to ask you guys about after a short break, and that is the impact of so many people commuting to Massachusetts for work, what that impact that has on the labor force here in the Granite State. We're also going to hear from you. We'd love your questions, comments, thoughts on this. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. More in a moment. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, it's our monthly roundup of New Hampshire's economic headlines, including a new mid-year review that shows Lots and lots of jobs in the Granite State, but not enough workers to fill them. Let's hear from you this hour. If you're feeling underemployed or if you're looking for work, what's your take on this? If you're an employer desperately seeking workers, what are you seeing among the people coming to you for jobs? Do you see a skills mismatch that our guests are talking about? We'd love to hear from you. Again, the number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. You can always find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Jeff Feingold, Steve Norton, Russ Tebow, let's go to our listeners now. And Travis is calling from Wilton. Hi, Travis. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Oh, good morning. I have two questions for you and your guests. One is, why aren't businesses willing to apprentice people on the jobs that they need? We have a ball bearing company over in Peterborough, and they need machinists, but they don't seem to be – they think the government ought to train these people. And when I graduated from high school, I didn't know squat about electricity, but I was trained all the way up through and have been a master electrician for 40 years.
Well, it's a great question, Travis. And your other one?
The other one is I'm wondering when – schools like MIT or RPI are going to kick out the next person who creates a digital equipment corporation. They seem to have come and gone in, you know, in the 80s and 90s. They were cutting edge, and then all of a sudden they became obsolete. But in between, they employed about 50,000 people.
Yeah.
We're the largest employer in New Hampshire.
Well, and I remember that. And I remember several of my fellow graduates from Keene High School going to work there. But Steve Norton, to his first question, this is a very important point. He says, why aren't businesses willing to apprentice people like they used to?
And the answer is they are. And in fact, New Hampshire Ball Bearing, which I think the gentleman is referring to, a guy named Gary Groling, has been working with the local high schools in both Peterborough and Laconia to create a career path out of high school, sort of voc tech-ish, to the community college system directly into and he has the same problem that he can't get kids that want to go through that process. And in part, they believe it's because this notion of manufacturing is dirty and the expectations have changed considerably.
Yeah, Jeff, go ahead.
I was going to say that Steve is pointing out, you know, it's one example in Peterborough, but it's all over the state. There are examples of businesses working with local community colleges, high schools, to try to find kids who are willing to go through that path to work in these manufacturing jobs, these advanced manufacturing jobs. I can think like a place like Hypertherm has been doing it for years. Whalen Engineering over in Charlestown has been working through Keene, River Valley Community College. And it's all over the state. Albany International over on the seacoast. It happens all over the place. And they're still scrambling for workers. It's one of these. It's part of the problem is that we, as Russ has pointed out, as we've said before, is that we just might not have enough of a pipeline of young people who are willing to go to pursue this.
Willing to because they don't like the image of manufacturing?
I don't know. I mean, I would think I guess so, but you know, we haven't had that kind of manufacturing in New Hampshire for a long time. It's not like we've had steel mills here, you know, right. and the mills have been closed for generations now.
Right. And if you ask the employers what the biggest problem is now with the ability to create a pipeline, it's actually the students' capacity to do work and to be trained, and that we may have reached the limit with our existing systems of what we can actually produce for someone to work in what is basically a high-level computer job. No matter what you're talking about, you've got to be able to have those math skills and those computer skills.
I agree with what Steve just said. I toured New Hampshire Ball Bearing, and when I toured it, there was a room, and everybody was working at computers. I said, I didn't realize you needed such a big accounting department here. He said, oh, no. He said, those are the people that are running the machines that you just walked. The room you just walked through.
Interesting. So they're not putting their physical hands on it.
It's all – yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I have a son that's in the golf course industry, and the whole golf course, all of the irrigation and everything else is all computer. Every single sprinkler head on that 18-hole golf course is monitored. The amount of moisture in different greens and different fairways is all monitored on a computer system. And so technology is everywhere. And not all young people are willing. The other thing that I saw in Jeff's report was the average manufacturing wage in the state now is $20 an hour.
Wow.
Average. So that's 40 grand a year, you know, basically. And that's average. So that means, you know, half are making more than that. Of course, half are making less. But nonetheless, that's pretty good wage in New Hampshire.
Sure. Go ahead, Steve.
And, you know, people have been saying – we've been talking about this workforce issue almost since the Great Recession. And I would say many institutions have made great progress. The University of New Hampshire has tried to create a STEM lab, build out in Manchester. The New Hampshire Charitable Foundation with other organizations are putting significant resources into that pipeline. Businesses across the state have created partnerships. We may be at the limit. We may not be able to do much more than that. That may mean we have to turn to bringing or importing other people from other places, which likely means higher wages or otherwise lowering the cost of business in New Hampshire so that wages can rise and not put businesses in a competitive disadvantage.
And also to do a shameless plug of New Hampshire Business Review, we did another story in this very same issue with this mid-year review talking about building the workforce pipeline and the programs that are being done specifically by the state, where people from the Economic Development Division go in to a company and say, what kind of workers do you need? And they'll try to fashion a specific program at one of the community colleges to help teach the people the skills. And we use this example of tube bending, which is something that, you know, I had never heard of before, but there were needs at least three different manufacturers. They needed tube benders, and the only program was available was in Texas. So they said to the Manchester Community College, would you be willing to set up a program if we can get you the people to help you design it? They said, sure, instead of shipping people to Texas. But this is for one little skill, and there's so many other skills that are needed.
Yeah. Here's another question, and then we should go back to our listeners. And Travis, that is a great question. Thank you so much. You know, I think Steve and Russ, you both mentioned that some young people may not want to go into manufacturing because of the narrative, you know, that it's sort of old school and dirty when in fact it's very high tech and clean and so forth. But Russ, another narrative about manufacturing is, you know, you hear about whole plants being shut down and jobs, you know, shipped off overseas and stunned workers, you know, sitting at their workstations going, what am I going to do now? So true or not, I mean, there's a narrative we're talking about today, which is great manufacturing companies scrambling for great workers. But the other narrative that you hear is factory shuttered, displaced workers. And so you kind of think, okay, I'm a young person. Do I really want to put my eggs in that basket?
Yeah, that's true. But I think that a lot of that is yesterday's story to a degree, Laura, with all respect. I think that we lost a tremendous amount. We lost 30,000 manufacturing jobs in New Hampshire during the last decade. But today, manufacturing employment, depending on where you start and where you finish the measurement, in New Hampshire is actually increasing or at very least stable. So I think a lot of that transition has been absorbed, and at least looking over the last two or three or four years, I think that you're finding more stability in the manufacturing sector in New Hampshire and actual growth.
Steve?
And this gets back to Travis's question also. He, you know, brought up RPI, NTI, digital back in the 80s and the 90s, and we've not yet found out what that is for New Hampshire, but for sure it's going to be city-based, where high energy human capital is, you know, engaging. That's happening across the country. And certainly it's not going to be traditional manufacturing, even the traditional manufacturing that we've done in the last 10 years, which is largely metals and other things. Ross Wright, 1.2% growth in manufacturing over the last 5 years, not very good. All right. It's growing at 7-8% in Colorado, you know, and other places. Where we're seeing job growth is in retail, hospitality, and other places. So we may be positioned, but until we crack this nut of either the jobs or the people, we're going to see one really stagnant growth in the manufacturing.
Interesting. So even though we hear about manufacturers scrambling for workers, you're saying in other states, they're figuring it out.
They figured it out. That's right. You know, people say, you know, whether it's rail or bus or, you know, in Silicon Valley, they're pumping people in by bus from an hour and a half out and just getting people in there. And we're an hour or less from, you know, this incredible metropolitan area in Boston. How do you take advantage of that?
I just want to say another thing. One of the reasons that people really have agita over this whole idea of manufacturing is because the economic impact of a manufacturing job is so much greater than it is in other like retail, hospitality, those other things.
Because the wages are good, the benefits are good, yeah. You're going to go out and spend in your community.
And more jobs are created as a result of manufacturing jobs.
And it's fresh money coming into the state rather than just doing each other's laundry.
I like that analogy. Yeah. Let's go back to our listeners, gentlemen. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Join us at 1-800-892-NHPR. It's our monthly roundup of New Hampshire economic news. And today we're digging into a new mid-year economic review that, again, finds lots and lots and lots of jobs in New Hampshire, but not enough workers or the right workers to fill them. We'd love your perspective on this, 1-800-892-6477. And guys, Leslie is in Bennington. Go ahead, Leslie, you're on the air and welcome.
Hi, thank you.
Sure.
I'm just wondering what role refugees are playing in this workforce dilemma. I know that many who come here are skilled workers in their home countries and could be, you know, skilled workers here as well.
Well, Leslie, it's a good question, especially relevant for Manchester, Concord, Nashua, a little in Laconia, where refugees are being resettled. Anybody take
well,
a look
yeah,
at this, Jeff?
That's actually a really good point that Leslie raises.
And
that,
lots of young families.
Yes,
so.
And that's something that people are already talking about. Is that, you know, if you want to get this work, our workforce younger, and our demographics of the whole of the state, is that we really should be welcoming more immigrants and not really closing our doors or having this kind of political rhetoric that some people seem to like spouting off, because these people are skilled. They have, you know, in many cases, they're professionals who are maybe don't have the language skills, but they have the actual skills themselves. And there, I know there are efforts in places like Nashua and in Manchester where they are reaching out to the immigrant communities, the refugee communities, to try to bring them into the workforce, to get businesses to kind of reach out to those communities and try to. You know, really basically get them more integrated into the economy, and not just in these low-skilled jobs, but in the higher-skilled jobs. And that's really what Leslie's talking about is really something that I think would be a nice thing for the policymakers at the state level to start thinking about to make the state more welcoming to people from other places who could revive our labor force.
Well, it's kind of the American story, Jeff, isn't
Absolutely.
It? I mean, like your family, for example,
Absolutely.
Comes from that classic garment district in
yep.
New York City, and immigrants
from
and
Russia,
you know.
Ukraine, you know, Eastern Europe, that kind of, you know, that's what it was. If you look at the Manchester Mill Yard, the employees came in from Canada, then they brought them in from
Ireland,
Greece,
Sweden,
all over the place, and that's how and you know, they ended up having 10,000 people employed at the mills there at one point in Manchester.
Again, our phone number, 1-800-892-6477. Leslie, thank you for that one. Email exchange at nhpr.org. And guys, on this question we talked about earlier, you know, many people with part-time work wanting full-time. And we sort of looked at what's the disconnect about there. Two callers who couldn't stay on mentioned that businesses are offering part-time work of 32 hours or less because, Russ Tebow, they don't want to pay the benefits and the insurance that it takes. So let's talk about that a little bit, that, you know, businesses are making a choice there.
I think that is an element that contributes to the dilemma of a lot of people looking for full-time work, a lot of employers looking for full-time employees. But I think it comes down to maybe really three words: willingness to pay. Are the employers willing to pay the kind of hourly wage that's needed and the tremendous cost of benefits, particularly health care? So I think there is legitimacy to that point.
Legitimacy to the point that, you know, all these people who want full-time work but have part-time, it's not their fault. It's that the businesses aren't willing to bring them on full time.
And there are some sectors of the economy that can't afford, you know, higher wages and a full retinue of benefits under the structure that we have today.
Well, the healthcare costs are ginormous.
Yeah, you look at the restaurant industry. Traditionally, hasn't had to pay those kind of wages and is reluctant to start doing it now.
Steve, you want to jump in?
Again, a question of competition. You can't just look at wages, healthcare independently, or commercial real estate costs. It's all of it. New Hampshire tends to be a high-cost place relative to the rest of the world, relative to North Carolina, but it's not relative to Massachusetts. And so, again, the question in my mind is wages, electricity, commercial real estate. As soon as we can find ways to tilt the playing field towards New Hampshire, you know, they'll make decisions. They'll increase wages because energy costs are lower, or, you know, commercial real estate.
Well, to that list, I would add healthcare costs, because they're very high in New Hampshire, and that's another aspect of this.
But lower than in any other New England state.
Yeah, but you know, they're still high.
I know, but that's really the point, is that we really need to be more focused in how we're thinking about these problems. We can't talk about labor force, 27,000 people. You have to talk about specific industries, specific competitors, and you have very specific strategies that you can relate back to success or failure.
Right, and I'm guessing that, you know, the demands and needs and what's being offered from manufacturers is very different from the tourism industry, which is very different from, you know, public education. I mean, they all have their challenge, the common challenge of finding workers, but different challenges about how to get there.
That's
Steve.
Right. Yep.
Russ, do you want to jump in?
I think that that it really does come down to adapting to this different labor force marketplace right now. And we're transitioning. Employers are transitioning to say, okay, well, I guess I really do have to pay $15 an hour for this employee. I can't go without this employee. This is a good person. I'll pay, you know. And we're transitioning to that point, but the mindset is not fully there yet.
All right, let's take another call. And I want to thank again those couple callers that offered that point because it's an important one to talk about. Helene is joining us from Greenfield. Hi, Helene. Go ahead. You're in the exchange. Welcome.
Hi. How are you?
Fine.
I'm the owner of the Poison Ivy Removal Company, which is a seasonal business, and I'm always looking for employees that are seasonal. But the problem I run into is that in the winter they need to do something and then they find a full-time job and they don't come back. So I'm always looking for somebody, maybe that's a school teacher, maybe that is in high school, so I can keep them all the way up through graduating college.
A poison ivy removal business. That's a tough business, Helene. Good for you.
It is. It's very interesting, though.
Wow. And so typically, how many people are you looking for, and for what months are you looking for them, like May to September or?
Actually, April to November. As soon as the ground is not frozen, I can pull poison ivy. I pay $12 to train for 80 hours, and then I move them up, you know, depending on how quickly they work and how well they understand shrubs and things. And it's botany or agricultural student would be perfect, but it's really hard to find these people. And I try to get them up to $15 an hour at the end of the first summer, and I think that's a pretty good wage, but it's hard to keep people.
Sure. This is really interesting, Helene. I'm so glad you called. Lots of elements there we could pull on, guys. Yeah. And I did not mean that pun. I did not mean to make that pun.
Oh, you planted the thought.
I'm sure you're wearing your gloves when you do that.
Yeah, right. But first of all, I mean, seasonal employees, Jeff Feingold, there are a lot of great businesses, great industries in New Hampshire that are seasonal in nature.
Absolutely.
I mean, you just don't need ski lift operators in August.
No, that's very true. And I don't know. I would think that Elaine has thought of this, but this is a perfect example to me where you would go to a high school or a college and say, look, looking for students who are interested in botany or interested in agriculture or something, and saying, I have jobs for you. I have jobs
that
are available.
But as we heard in your report, teens are less interested for whatever reason in working today.
But also think about her season is too long for a high schooler or a college person.
Yes.
And in the national studies, they show that those particular types of jobs, kids can't take. They got to be back in school before Labor Day.
Yeah.
And so I hope we could ask that woman a question, how long she'd been in business, and did she ever have the ability to get those folks, and who were they? So maybe that's changed.
Because it does seem it coincides with the ski season also.
Right.
Yeah, April to November is the same.
I mean, but it's also a pretty tough job.
Yeah, I have looked at some of the seasonal businesses in the state, greenhouse businesses, for example, that have a very strong peak. And actually it ties back to something we talked about just a little while ago, which is to a great degree, immigrant labor can help fill those gaps and entry-level jobs that move up and become maybe management skills over time, too.
All right, Helene, thank you so much for that call, and good luck to you. We'll talk more in just a moment. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, it's our monthly roundup of economic news. We've been talking about a new mid-year review by New Hampshire Business Review that shows tons of jobs in the Granite State, but not enough workers, or not quite the right workers to fill these jobs. We'd love to hear from you on this. If you're an employer, do you see the skills mismatch that we've been talking about? If you're looking for work or you're feeling underemployed, what's your take on this? We'd love to hear from you again. The number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.com. www.refugeeaid.org. And a little bit later in this segment, we're also going to talk about new efforts to bring new life to dying shopping malls. This is a trend around New Hampshire and around the country. Again, you can join us by email, exchange@nhpr.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. So, gentlemen, one more question about this labor force mismatch, gap, whatever you want to call it. Steve, one more element that New Hampshire Business Review mentioned is so many New Hampshire workers commuting to other states. Maybe these are the really, you know, highly skilled, motivated, trained, wonderful people that we want working here in New Hampshire.
Right. That's been true forever, though, to some extent. You know, we have more, slightly more than 80,000 people that work in Massachusetts, and we have 26,000 people who live in Massachusetts but work in New Hampshire.
So we've, give us those again. 80,000 going
80,000
out.
80,000 go out.
25,000 come in.
25,000 come back in. We've got about 15,000 coming in from Vermont, 15,000 coming in from – so we are a part of a metropolitan area that has never been just New Hampshire. It's always been that type of commuting, and it's for high-wage jobs. People want to live in a nice place. It's sort of the suburban dream, and that's been the story for since 1980.
So is it problematic, or is it just that's the way it is?
I think, well, it increases the likelihood that we'll have people here in New Hampshire, and it increases the likelihood that you'll have entrepreneurial activity and people will build businesses here if they, you know, live in New Hampshire. I think it also creates opportunities for going elsewhere, you know, for folks moving to other places, which is a potentially a problem, migrating elsewhere. But I think net positive for the state.
Really? Because it's often framed, Steve, as a net negative. You know, I think in one of our recent political campaigns, we had one candidate, and this shows you how many elections I've done. I can't remember who, but saying this is a problem. We should bring these people back. What's wrong with our state? Why are all these people leaving? So it's not a net negative?
I don't think it is. No, I think it's net positive.
Russ?
I think, you know, sort of the thought is work in Massachusetts, but spend your money in New Hampshire. You know, that's sort of the way we have been doing it for a long time. At the same time, I think this pool of out migration, this pool of the 80,000 that Steve mentioned, is maybe one way to crack that egg, to hang on to more of those people as job opportunities improve here. The other thing is we're making a lot of big infrastructure investments in Interstate 93, soon to come in the Everett Turnpike, that's going to make that even more fluid, the movement back and forth across particularly the Massachusetts border, even more fluid. So I think it's a pool of potential workers that if we did have, you know, good paying, comparable jobs, it's a lot easier to stay close to home than to commute to Boston.
So maybe some of these companies should go to the you know, the major bus drop-off places like Concord and Manchester and Salem and London and Portsmouth with the park and ride and, hand out their flyers.
You could be at
flyers.
Work right now.
Yeah,
Or why not just have a free bus from Massachusetts to New Hampshire?
There you go.
From Massachusetts to New Hampshire.
To the major advanced high-tech manufacturing areas. To Pease, to, you know, the area around the mills, to, you know, Nashua.
Well, and the buses to Boston are nice. Yeah. I mean, you've got the Wi-Fi, and they're cushy, and air-conditioned, and so forth.
Well,
so why not? That's a good idea.
That is one of the arguments behind the people who would like to see the commuter rail and coming up to Manchester is to bring that workforce in. Whether that works or not is another matter, but that's one of the major arguments.
So what do you think about this net positive, net negative, or just the way it is, and don't fuss about it?
Well, you know, as Steve was saying, if you're looking at southern New Hampshire as part of the Boston metropolitan area, which is really what it is, like for a lot of statistics, that's where we're part of it. When you know, look at Nielsen ratings and all those things, that is, and it's we are just it's like people in New Jersey complaining that people going into New York to work. I mean, you know, there's a benefit to having people, you know, going back and forth. I think what we need to see is eventually having that response when we do have 93 finally opened and widened. Will there be more housing built? Will there be more housing to bring people into New Hampshire who then could be saying, well, okay, maybe I will work here now because, you know, it's easy for me to get to Massachusetts, but it's even easier for me to get to a Manchester or a Merrimack.
Steve?
So 100,000 people commute from New Hampshire to elsewhere and 65,000 commute from elsewhere to here.
Total.
So there are 165,000 people who are moving across this very fluid border.
Right. We're a small state.
Small state, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Vermont. So it is this metropolitan area that.
Two more questions from our listeners on this workforce issue. And then I did want to turn to some really interesting ideas about repurposing dead or dying shopping malls, concrete carcasses. I think the Atlantic magazine called them. But here's a question from Greg in Lebanon. He says, how much is our incarceration regime contributing to the drop in LFP. I'm not quite sure what that means.
Labor
force participation. Thank you. With millions of ex-cons unable to find work due to post-incarceration stigma or disqualification. Greg, thank you for the call. I don't know if anybody has an answer to that. I guess I would say that in terms of the labor force, there are some number of folks, right, Jeff, who just have a really hard time participating, whether through illness or difficulty getting hired because of a criminal record.
The real problem with people who are incarcerated is when they get out, a lot of employers will not hire them, and it's not necessarily the fault of the person who is incarcerated. They've served their time, or whatever, they paid their debt, whatever you want to call it, and it's hard to get a job in a lot of industries because of that. And that's a discussion that that's probably another whole show you could do on, is about people who are incarcerated, what their opportunities are coming out of prison. But in a lot of cases, they're very limited.
Well, thank you for the email. And a couple more have come in. Here's two Facebook comments. This person says, if the North Country has workers and high unemployment, why aren't manufacturers moving there? It's a great question, Steve.
Infrastructure and transportation. People are moving out of the North Country to find these jobs elsewhere. And that's been the story for the last 10 years.
The other thing is just population density is so low that if you need 100 skilled workers, you would have to probably pull from all of Coos County, Northern Grafton County, and Northern Carroll County to get 100, skilled workers. The population density, although the rates are higher, unemployment rates are higher, the number of people up there is so low that it's very difficult to assemble a group of 100 people or so that, can fill your need.
Well, I love this question, though, because we do hear that, people there especially are seeking jobs, so why not?
Let's talk about the idea of using one of the holding pools for fish creation or growing fish. Aquaculture, thank you. Jeez. The firm came in and said, we're excited to do this, but we need $50 million worth of infrastructure changes to make it work.
Infrastructure meaning not just roads, Steve,
not roads, but
internet.
Making sure the water, all that the infrastructure around this growing business could exist. And I think, ultimately we will find that there will be uses for this environment infrastructure, maybe not in the short term, but certainly in the long term, because it is so cheap, in essence, to do business up there from a construction perspective.
Well, and to live. Right. Living costs are much, much lower.
A couple more comments I want to share from our listeners, and you guys don't need to respond, but these are interesting. Another person on Facebook says, companies aren't willing to pay what people are worth. Two different employers in two different fields had me training new employees and acting as a manager, but refused to give me the title or pay. And then Deb in Newbury says, I am embarrassed to admit I've become a snowbird. There are thousands of skilled service workers in Florida who have no jobs in the summer and lots of New Hampshire service jobs to be filled with capable workers. So how do you create a situation where people can work summers in New Hampshire and winters in Florida? Deb says the stumbling block seems to be housing. Deb, thank you for that one. Did you want to jump in on that, Jeff, with your comments earlier?
There's some poison ivy jobs available.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. Well, and gentlemen, I want to turn in the last 6 or 7 minutes that we have here to something else that really caught my eye recently. We've talked a lot about the housing market on this program, especially with you, Russ. That's your specialty. But I want to ask you all about commercial real estate. In particular, what to do with dead or dying shopping malls. And first of all, Rusty Bo, why are shopping malls dying? It was the thing, 20 or 30 years ago, right? A new mall.
Exactly. Well, part of the problem is online shopping, which absorbs, by some estimates, as much as 25% of our spending, Amazon.com, et cetera. That's part of the problem. The other part of the problem is I think that just the concept of the huge mall, people are getting kind of tired of that. And what's replacing it is lifestyle centers that have a very strong focus on entertainment, restaurants, and a mixture of residential, retail, and office uses.
What we used to call
vibrant.
Downtown.
Exactly. And if you go to Market Street in Linfield, Mass., which is almost 500,000 square feet, you feel like you're driving through a downtown. And Linfield had no downtown before this.
Oh, I remember. So, it was total suburbia.
Yeah, it was total suburbia. And the former Colonial Country Club is now Market Street, which is basically downtown Linfield. We're seeing this here in New Hampshire in two important places. One is the former Wayfarer site and Jordan Marsh / Macy's site in Bedford, which has been cleared of those buildings that were built since I've been around New Hampshire. And in its place is almost a 500,000 square feet of just what I said, office space, retail space, Whole Foods stores, Whole Foods marketplaces there now. So that's about a 500,000 square feet there, which has totally repositioned that site in Bedford. The newest one to emerge is at the former Rockingham Racetrack across from the mall at Rockingham Park, and that's even bigger yet. That's 1.2 million square feet, again, with I think about 500 housing units, two hotels, office space, Whole Foods Market, Tuscan Market. The idea is to have a complex that gives you entertainment value, good shopping opportunities, a place to work, a place to live, and it's symbiotic. They really feed off each other. The retail is stronger because of the residential and vice versa. So we have two good examples. And then maybe a little bit before that was, although not a repositioning, was Premium Outlet Center in Merrimack. Interestingly, all three of these, and they're major investments, they'll generate each somewhere between $2 and $3 million a year in property taxes, are all in the traditional Golden Triangle of New Hampshire. So maybe we're getting back to – I mean, no, Steve's made this point often on the show that urban settings, things close to Massachusetts are outperforming the rest of the state. But these are all major new investments in the multi-million dollar range that will pay several million dollars a year in taxes.
So some of those sound similar to traditional shopping malls, but a little bit different.
They're not enclosed.
Yeah.
You drive close to where you want to be, and a good walking environment. And the mall, of course, is inside. I actually thought that this whole concept of lifestyle centers, which is what they're called, wouldn't do as well in New England because what do you do in December, January, when it's really cold out? But the developers and the occupants are optimistic about these.
Steve, go ahead.
It's really – I hadn't thought about this until you mentioned the lifestyle concept. It's really about where you want the center of commercial and life activity to be in your community. And in Concord, the question is, do you want it up on the Heights or do you want it downtown? And that's a question of zoning. I'd be interested in knowing what kind of changes these communities made to allow these developments to occur. For example, the mall in Salem will die with this development.
I'm not sure that's true because it didn't happen in Dedham, for example. It didn't happen. There's a large mall similar to the mall at Rockingham Park. And what might happen is now having twice as much space, you have twice as much gravitational pull, so that more shoppers will come. It didn't happen. Now, traditionally, Steve's right, suburbanization of retailing killed downtowns in America. But downtowns now are also starting to follow this pattern of entertainment. If you look at downtown Manchester, restaurants, cultural activities have replaced shopping as sort of the anchor activity. More and more people wanting to live downtown Concord, Manchester, Nashua. So maybe there's more blending the symbiotic relationship. We've moved away, Steve. The answer to your quick question, is zoning has changed. It used to be that you could only build retail in a retail area. Now, both of these communities have a more flexible zoning that allows a mixture of uses if you meet certain standards as to parking, amount of site coverage, community facilities. So zoning has become more flexible in response to a reaction against kind of like monoculture of you can only build apartments in the apartment zone.
Right.
You can only do retail in the retail zone. You can only do office in the office
zone. People are saying, no, that's not how we want to live anymore. We don't want to shop in zone A and live in zone B and work in zone C. We want to mix it all up.
It's called the new urbanism.
Yeah, but infrastructure needs to keep up with that, and infrastructure can't keep up with it until zoning keeps up with it.
But
policy
changes,
Steve, right?
These developments are still the suburbanization effort. It's not downtown. And until cities begin to change their zoning around housing and second-story housing and, unfortunately, conservation historical building issues, these types of developments are less expensive. And so they're going to occur outside the city limits.
Yeah, and extremely popular. They just do very well, which is why they're proliferating.
Yeah. I mean, it's a really good point is that that's really what's happening is they're just recreating downtowns in these huge developments.
When these giant
– you go to downtown Concord, they've made a huge investment there, and it's like it's changed overnight. It's very attractive. It's very welcoming. But it's not the same as this thing. And It's really I can't imagine something like this being built in Concord at this point. I don't know if the space
Concord,
is there.
Concord is zoned perfectly for this type of development that occurred in the Bedford already.
That's my point. And the same thing is true in Manchester. Manchester has this thing where it's, I think RustNet mentioned it, these being able to live on the second floor of buildings downtown, which is something they've been trying to do for a long time to attract more people into Manchester, because apparently a lot of people want to live in downtown Manchester.
Well, new life for dead or dying shopping malls. It's a real interesting story. I did want to take just the last minute that we have, gentlemen, to ask you, and I'll start with you, Russ, what economic numbers or trends are you going to be looking at over the next month? Now, recognizing that July, August, it can be kind of slow, but what are you going to be watching?
Well, the end of this week, the job number comes out for the country.
Last month
was 38,000 jobs, which was really very weak performance. People are talking maybe 175,000 this month. If we have another weak month of under 100,000 jobs, it's going to be a signal that the U.S. economy is slowing down. If we're up around 150,000 or more, it's a sign that the aberration was that 38,000. So I think that's a really key number coming
up. Sure,
and
those always come
up the
first
Friday of
the
month. Number that's important is some guy ate 70 hot dogs in 10 minutes at Nathan's in Coney Island, and he won $10,000 doing it. So.
Oh, okay, the speed eating thing, I never, ever, ever go there. Go ahead, Steve, what are you going to be?
I'm still thinking about the hot dogs.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I can. I think the jobs pieces. But I get concerned that we spend so much time on 1 month's data.
Mm-hmm.
I would say unless we see a huge increase in job numbers, that we're just going to be fuddling along at 1.5% growth, and that's just what it means in the trend.
Nationally. Yeah. Go ahead, Jack.
I just want to inject a little politics into this, and I'm really kind of curious to see how markets respond from July 18th to the 22nd when the GOP convention is being held and when all the speeches are going on. That could have an effect on how we can see maybe basically how people are responding to some of the proposals from the presumptive presidential nominee.
Okay. All of you, thank you so much. We'll see you soon, and thank you for being here.
Great to be here.
Great to be
here. Thank you.
This is The Exchange on NHPR.